Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Good afternoon. At the tone, Pacific Daylight Time will be...
It's 5 o'clock.
5 o'clock.
One step closer to my own personal hell.
This is Primetime on Sports Radio 1080 The Fan.
We expect the best. We're not afraid to break someone. Do you hear me?
Primetime is your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports.
Go ahead and clap. Mediocrity deserves applause.
Isaac Rob.
I'm miserable. I had to get up at 10 o'clock this morning.
Jason Sakanic.
I'm a dude playing a dude disguised as another dude.
Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right, welcome back. Hope you have a good, had a good weekend, good holiday, had some fun, maybe did some barbecuing. I don't know. What do people do on Labor Day?
I don't know. I labored.
Sada.
I was working, so.
Same.
Yeah,
I hear.
Then I came home and had tacos.
I hear there was a really big, great radio broadcast.
Oh, it was the best.
Yesterday on The Fan.
Award-winning. Sorry everyone missed it.
I mean, if you missed it, you should be ashamed.
Yeah. I guess you could always podcast it. Or just listen to the one today because it's very similar.
Yeah. It's always awkward when we do the Labor Day show. It's the same show the next day.
Yeah, covered a lot of the same stuff.
But, such is life. Coming up this hour, guess what we're going to cover?
I'm guessing more college football.
Oregon losing to Auburn.
Football is football.
And, so that's what we got coming up. Some Pac-12 talk. You know, there's some pretty significant quarterback injuries in the Pac-12 already.
Yeah, significant injuries at other positions, too. I mean, the Pac-12 is kind of licking its wounds. And it wasn't a great week for the Pac-12, but it was a worse week for the ACC. And I think the SEC had four bad losses. Unfortunately, the Pac-12 is the one that everyone talks about. It's like, the Pac-12, I don't think, had as bad a week as either of those conferences, but the reputation for the Pac-12 will take a bigger hit than the SEC or the ACC's. And that's a shame, because the ACC is a garbage. They know they had 9 of their teams lose this
ACC
weekend.
ACC did?
ACC had 9.
Damn.
That league sucks, minus Clemson. And Syracuse may end up being pretty good, but that league is terrible. The SEC had 4 really bad losses. You know, and the Big Ten had their fair share. I know Purdue ended up getting knocked off, but the Pac-12 had some of their bottom teams lose, and then one of their teams near the top in Oregon had a heartbreaking loss to Auburn, and now all of a sudden, again, here comes everyone piling on the Pac-12, when in the reality it is, the Pac-12 isn't worse than anyone else, and I think the Pac-12 is better than the ACC in bunches. They just don't have one of those elite teams right now to hold it up. And the one game that you needed to win for your reputation, you let get away, and that was Oregon-Auburn.
It's interesting to me that Clemson has basically just fought through all of the stuff about the ACC, right? Like, they're so good. They've built such a good program.
Yep.
That it doesn't even matter that the ACC sucks.
No,
we just assume that Clemson would win most every other league.
USC has had some of this going under the Pete Carroll days. It's not as if the Pac-12 had a whole lot going on when USC was rolling through it. But it didn't matter because USC had proven time and time again that they should get the benefit of the doubt. And Clemson has it. Clemson is so good. They're going to be favored by basically 3 touchdowns in every game. Texas A&M is by far their best opponent, and they're favored by 18. So they will be 3 touchdown favorites. And yet Clemson could still lose a game somewhere along the way and still get into the college football playoff, even though their schedule is atrocious. It doesn't matter. We have given them now the seal of approval. You will get the benefit of the doubt. And quite frankly, they've earned it.
All right. So that's coming up, a little hot college football talk, and we'll dissect what went wrong and what cost Oregon most in dropping that game to Auburn. Coming up in the club, we've got chocolate news, hold your money tight, and we never got to over tourism talk. So that's what we have planned for you. Thank you for being here. Let's now get to the Hot 5 at 5.
Hot topics, hot opinions.
Oh, darling, I'm hot today.
And hot air. It's time for the Hot 5 at 5.
It's hot.
The Hot 5 at 5 on Primetime with Isaac and Sue.
No, I mean it. That's very hot.
The Hot 5 at 5. Refreshed on the Fan by Frost Brewed Coors Light. Number 5.
Well, let's check in on the baseball races as we move into September here. Yankees get some good news on the injury front because Edwin Encarnacion is back.
there's really, outside of the NL Central, there's not one other race that I think is within six games, minus the wild card.
Yeah, Yankees are cruising in the AL East. The Twins have opened up a 5.5 game lead on the Indians in the AL Central.
Yeah, I think the Cards and the Cubbies, is that three?
They're sitting at three.
That's the closest.
You know, the wild card race is, you know, the Rays lost to the O's in the first game of doubleheader today. So that puts the A's only one game back of a wild card spot.
Our Oakland A's.
Our Oakland A's, yes. Right now.
Or is it our Rays?
Well, it's both.
Oh. The Rays.
The Rays. Hey. Rays. Hey. So the Indians and the Rays are tied for the wild card game right now, but the A's the only other team really in it at one back. And then the National League, the Washington Nationals have a pretty good stronghold on one of the wild card spots. And then it's the Cubs leading the Phillies by 2.5.
The Mets, come on, four back.
Oh, they're hanging around.
Yeah, the Red Sox are five back in the AL, right?
Hey.
They're kind of hanging around.
We talked about Arizona last week.
Yeah, they're 5.5 now.
Mediocre they were.
Yeah.
Yeah, they rattled off like 10 of 11 or something. And now they're only four back.
Yeah, they'll go tumbling.
3.5 back.
They'll go tumbling the other way.
Team USA basketball.
The least inspiring Team USA ever.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, none of the stars are playing.
No one wants, but no one wants to be there.
They won. They beat, this is the World Cup, FIBA World Cup.
No, they won.
They're
barely
out in Shanghai. They went to overtime and beat Turkey.
Nothing says dynamic basketball like needing overtime to beat Turkey.
Well, I didn't watch it. Don't care about it.
No.
But anytime you see that Team USA basketball went to overtime, aren't you immediately disgusted?
Yeah, a little bit of that, except when you realize that this is like the, I don't know, we're like 30 down the list at this point, yeah, of anyone that, I don't even know who the best player on the team is.
I think it's
Donovan Mitchell.
Spider Mitchell?
Yeah, yeah. Donovan Mitchell.
And they should have lost. They threw up a couple of really bad threes, and Jason Tatum got fouled on the final one that actually forced overtime.
Didn't
Tatum get hurt?
Yeah, yeah, he rolled his ankle. Chris Middleton's playing. Lillard and McCollum aren't there.
No.
I mean, they were like,
No one is.
So, yeah. They won, though. JT Daniels, USC quarterback, is out for the season.
He gone.
He got hurt in the Fresno State game.
Well, and the tricky part for USC, too, is they had some other guys, including Jack Sears, bail after they announced that JT Daniels was the starter, although it sounds like Sears hasn't transferred. He just was in the transfer portal, and Clay Helton and Sid say that he's open to Jack Sears coming back, which could be a little awkward.
Daniels tore his meniscus. It's an ACL injury, yeah, that's got him out. And then Stanford plays USC this week, and Stanford's quarterback, KJ Costello, is out with a concussion.
Have they officially ruled him out, or is he just in protocol?
No, he's in protocol. They haven't ruled him out for the game. Yeah. I didn't mean to say it that way. It's just that he left the Northwestern game, and they don't know whether he's going to play against USC.
Yeah. So I'm not sure, is it the Slovis or the Fink for USC that's starting? I think Slovis came in for him.
Yeah, I think he might even be a freshman.
I think he is.
I think Fink ended up being third string.
I'm looking here. I'll look it for you, but yeah, I think he's a freshman.
New college football rankings see Auburn jump into the top 10 in the AP. They are 10th. The Ducks fall to 16th. Oregon coach Mario Cristobal announcing yesterday outside linebacker Adrian Jackson is out for the season. Now, he didn't play as a backup to Lamar Winston in the Auburn game, and that's because he broke his foot earlier in the week. Freshman wide receiver J.R. Waters is also out for the season. They originally thought he'd only miss 6 to 8 weeks, but his foot injury has put him on the shelf. Micah Pittman remains out until the medical staff clears him, so says Mario Cristobal. Juwan Johnson is still on the two deep this week and is a day-to-day situation.
Yeah, because everyone thought he was going to play. I mean, they kind of given him the all clear. At least that's what we all thought. And then it wasn't until the game that he was ruled out.
I'm going to tell you something. He plays, they win that game.
Look, at this point, one of their big issues is depth at receiver, and Arroyo came out today and even said that some of the conservative play calling, not throwing the ball downfield, was because of that. It sounds like they were trying to protect the young kids and said they needed to open it up more.
And numero uno is that it looks like the Dallas Cowboys will have Ezekiel Elliott very soon.
Yeah, deal is basically in principle is done. There's a press conference scheduled for tomorrow. Him and his agent got on a plane from Cabo and are flying back. So, you know, at this point, the only thing to be seen is exactly what the deal is and whether or not he ends up being the highest or the second highest. And this may be one of those where they can claim, like, in new money that he's the highest, and yet in total value, maybe he's not. Because I'm guessing both sides want to win here, because Dallas doesn't want to pay him to be the best back more than Gurley, but obviously that's what Elliott wants.
And then a little late-breaking quarterback news out of the NFL. Rams quarterback Jared Goff has just received a 4-year contract extension. We don't know the terms yet, but that's going to keep him there for the next 6 years.
I'm going to take a guess and say that the terms of that deal will officially be an S ton of money.
Golf. You mean like Brian Hoyer money?
I'm going to guess slightly above that. Look, it doesn't matter whether you're the best. If you are elite and you're the next one up, you become the highest paid. He will be officially.
So you think he'll be the highest?
Maybe not in total value, because if it's only going to be a 4-year deal, but I'll bet you that on average, yeah, I bet you he's the highest paid.
Right now, the highest paid quarterback in the NFL average per year is Russell Wilson.
Yeah,
I'll at 35.
And I'll bet you he ends up topping this.
And by the way, that means $35 million a year.
Yeah.
You think Goff's going to get more than that?
Mm. I would be surprised if he didn't. I mean, when have you seen one of these guys re-sign and then you look at it and be like, oh, that seems like a reasonable deal? That never happens.
Carson Wentz already got his. He got $32
million. Yeah.
Average is $32 million. So the top five guys in terms of average salary, Russell Wilson is one. Ben Roethlisberger is two at $34 million. Aaron Rodgers is three at $33.5 million. Carson Wentz is four at $32 million. And Matt Ryan is five at $30 million. Those are the only guys that average over $30 million.
You think coming off a Super Bowl that he was going to sign an extension for less than that? I don't buy it.
All right. That is your Hot 5 at 5. It's brought to you by Coors Light. Enter to win an Oregon-branded Yeti cooler anywhere Coors Light is sold. Coors Light, mountain cold refreshment made to chill. What went wrong for the Ducks? Next on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
So it looks like, according to Ian Rappaport, NFL reporter, we were just talking about Jared Goff getting an extension from the Rams, he won't be topping Russell Wilson. It sounds like they're going to put him in the Carson Wentz range, which would be, like I said, about $32 million per year.
Man, what a bargain.
That sucks.
32. How did he? Man,
poor
I don't know
guy.
How he's going to live. $32 million. That does surprise me, though, in all honesty, that he didn't reach out for more. We'll actually see what happens when the details of the contract come out. Does this include his old money? Because they said this is not tearing up his old deal.
Yeah.
So he's got 2 years left, and then he's going to get the extension. I wonder if the $32 million a year averages out the 4 years plus the two. So this is what teams do sometimes, and this is why I wonder if he doesn't end up getting more in those 4 years. So like with Ezekiel Elliott, he may want to be the highest paid back. And what you can do is you can say in new money you are, but we're tying it to the old contract as well. And so we have to wait and see what the details, but you know, at $32 million, look, it's a lot of money, whether it's 35 or 32. I'm just a little surprised that if it does end up being 32, that this didn't really drag out. You really haven't heard a lot about this. I know they said that this deal is going to get done, but it just kind of was a quiet thing, and then today it kind of just leaked out.
What do you think of Goff?
I think he's good, but I think a lot of guys could be good in that system. I mean, it's young, and so there isn't – it's not like there's a ceiling on him and that he can't kind of grow and develop. But I do think a little bit he's got some of that system kind of label on him. But he's a physical guy, can make all the throws. I just don't know if he is he's the end all to be all if you put him in different situations. I'll tell you, of those five guys you're talking about, the Aaron Rodgers and the Russell Wilsons and the Roethlisbergers and guys like that, if I had to start a team and you didn't tell you, I don't get McVay, I don't get like an offensive system, I just have to build it around a guy, he would probably, well, Wentz would be because of the injury history. But of the so-called elite quarterbacks, he would be at the bottom of my list of guys that I would start a team with.
All right. We were alerted earlier to a little posting on 247sports.com.
Yes.
And it's Marcus Arroyo, Oregon's offensive coordinator, talking about what he would do differently in the Auburn game. And it's very interesting because in our first hour, we were just talking about him, and he's taking a lot of heat.
I think he's public enemy right now with a lot of Duck fans.
Public enemy number one.
Yeah.
Yeah, he and Herbert, I think, are taking heat. And look, anytime you lose a game like that, especially in that fashion, you know, fingers are going to get pointed. It's just the nature of the game. These guys can handle it.
Sure.
Is it unfair? No. But at the same time, I also don't feel like we need to overreact. I mean, that was a really big game, and it was the first one, so it's all we have. But I thought Oregon looked pretty damn good and is a really good football team. They just didn't have, on that day, the coaches made a few mistakes. The players made a few huge mistakes, and that was enough to lose an otherwise a game that you otherwise dominated.
Yeah.
And they were really good. So I am actually hopeful, if I'm an Oregon fan, about how good they can be this year. But obviously, you know, you really needed that. You had it, and you blew it. But Arroyo, so we were talking about this in hour one, and it's a couple of things. It's like, well, when Auburn figures out that your wide receivers, they can, like, none of them can do anything against you, and they just play man coverage and then just load up, that makes Marcus Arroyo's job a lot more difficult.
Yes.
And Justin Herbert's job a lot more difficult. And so it's hey, do you... You know, did Oregon err in how they went about attacking Auburn once they saw that in the second half, or do they need to take the reins off of Justin Herbert a little bit more? There's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts, and ways you can second guess. Ultimately, I thought what Auburn was doing in the second half made it so Marcus Arroyo couldn't do a whole hell of a lot, short of just throwing something up. And throwing up a 50-50 ball.
Well, and he said today in the article, he said, I'll always take ownership. He said, man, just let those guys go out there and play. I think when we look back, let those guys a little bit more to a degree. He's talking about letting those guys play a little bit more. They did not make any adjustments whatsoever when Auburn changed the way they were playing. When Auburn took away the little short underneath stuff, Oregon basically just went into a shell and said that we're good enough with the underneath stuff and running the ball, and our defense is playing well enough that we're going to play not to make a mistake.
So there's
our
answer.
And it came back and bit him in the butt.
So that's what we were talking about in hour one. Yeah. And then somebody says, hey, read these quotes from Arroyo today. And
he admits it. He was trying to protect.
Yeah.
He did not feel comfortable with the guys on the outside. And I get that.
I get it too.
But at the same time, running your head into a wall time and time again, throwing these little dink and dunks. Justin Herbert was, I think, 16 of 18 for like 110 yards in the second half. Bo Nix completed, I think, 13 passes to Herbert's 28 and had more plays for 10 yards or more than Justin Herbert had.
You know, it's
when you got a Heisman candidate, I don't think there's a lot of excuses for
but
that.
But here's what I think sucks about this is that even though you're right about that, you got to trust your players.
Yeah.
You just do. He didn't like the matchups. The fact that the Juwan Johnson and Micah Pittman were out were enormous in that football game.
Yeah.
Enormous.
Yes.
So that is a big problem
because
for Oregon.
Both of those guys, you would assume, you hear from Pittman and then Juwan Johnson with the size, those are the sorts of guys that you would hope could go up and make plays one-on-one on the outside because they were daring you
and Herbert
to
can,
throw the ball downfield.
Herbert can make those throws.
Yes.
So it's like that's why you didn't see any of that. Now, what Arroyo is saying, and he came out and answered the question today that we were asking in hour one, and it is that why you didn't see it is he didn't really trust the guys that were out there.
Yeah.
That is, in and of itself, a mistake. But at the same time, my God, if Addison catches that first touchdown,
or they don't fumble.
If your kicker makes a kick or you don't fumble on the 4-yard line,
it's not a game.
None of this we're not talking about this with Arroyo. As a matter of fact, we're probably talking about how good of a game he called.
Yeah.
Because I thought he was pretty good in the first half.
Mm-hmm. And even in that the drive to open up the second half, I thought was a very effective drive. But again, all three of those drives mixed in throwing the ball downfield, and then Auburn made adjustments. And like, I get being scared of your wide receivers, but you've got a 4-year starter at quarterback. There's no reason in my mind to have training wheels. And to me, I even trust Herbert to say, look, if it's not there, that's one thing. But, you know, let's at least give them a look. Let's at least take a shot and force Auburn to at least respect it. And when a team is playing man coverage on the outside like that, and the linebackers are sucked up, there are seams. You can attack seams in defenses, crossing routes over the middle. I remember in the national title game a number of years ago, when Auburn was mauling Florida State. Florida State could do nothing in the first half due to man physical coverage that Auburn. And in the second half, Florida State came out and they gave you all these bunch formations. Why did they do that? Because it got wide receivers off the line of scrimmage and got them into routes where you couldn't just mug them at the line of scrimmage. At some point, you have to be able to scheme your way into getting guys open, even if the talent isn't there one-on-one to beat and to beat Auburn's guys. And to be fair, Dan Orlovsky did a breakdown on this, and he said that minus all the little dink and dunk stuff, the downfield throws, twice all game did he say that he saw in his film study an Oregon guy that was actually open versus Auburn's coverage. So to be fair, Auburn did do a great job of coverage against Oregon. I still think that when you have a quarterback like that and he has time to throw, you still have to be creative in your scheme in order to work guys open. And then on the other side of things, I thought that there was a lot of meat left on the bone in the run game. There were plays to be made in the second half, and they just didn't get made. In the first half, I thought you really gashed Auburn with the run game, and you had them on their heels. In the second half, Auburn committed and was doing more slants and stunts to try to stop the run. But I don't think the backs ran particularly well. They didn't break any tackles. And when you go back and look at some of the footage, there were cutback lanes that were open that could have gone for big yards to keep drives going. And they just didn't hit the holes. And so to me, when you look at Oregon now as a one game evaluation, it right now it appears that not only do you have a deficiency on the outside with the injuries, I think you have some really solid backs, but I don't think you have an elite back. I don't think you have a LaMichael James or a Royce Freeman type. And that'll be interesting to see if one of those guys can develop, because there is some talent back there and you like the youth and like the way they run and the tempo in which they do it. But I don't think you have a pure runner at this point. And I thought the offensive line played really, really well. Just didn't work out for you.
The elite guy is the quarterback. And that's the guy that you got to unleash. And I think it's big of Arroyo to come out and admit that.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times, see, the problem with, I feel like you think that Arroyo can improve, right? Like, everybody should be able to improve in their jobs. It doesn't matter how inexperienced or experienced they are.
Yeah.
You're always evolving, and I think it's a good sign that Arroyo can get better by the fact that he's admitting this. His exact quote was, I think probably looking back, you'd probably say probably not protecting those young guys who were out there who had to go in and step in, probably not protect them and see if we cut it loose a little more.
Yeah.
He threw in a lot of probablys. And so, yeah, and then as you read, the quote is, I'll always take ownership. Man, just let those guys go out there and play.
Well, Gus,
I think when we look back, let those guys play a little bit more to a degree.
And I'll look at it on the other end of things, and I get that there was a point of desperation because one team was playing from behind, so they couldn't be conservative. But I think in the second half, you had a team that was playing to hold on to a lead and not lose and not make a mistake. And I think you had Gus Malzahn, on the other hand, get desperate. And he took a quarterback that I thought played really poorly in Bo Nix. And maybe he didn't have a choice, but he turned it loose. And Auburn made enough plays. And it just was interesting to see a true freshman who had played a really poor game being allowed to go out there and run around and make plays. And you had Justin Herbert, who's a four-year starter, I thought was largely handcuffed in that second half. Now, again, to be fair on the other side, I thought Herbert was poor on third down. I think there were a lot of times when it was, you know, third and five, he threw a three-yard route. You can't do that. There was at least two times that I thought he had guys open and he threw poor balls. And then the running backs, I think a couple times, had some plays there on third down where they couldn't break a tackle or they didn't find the right hole. So it was a collective group effort there, but 4 of 14 on third down isn't going to get it done. And a lot of those were not like third and nines, third and tens. There was a lot of third and four, third and fives, and you couldn't convert. In fact, I don't think they completed a pass on third down until late in the game.
Well, I think that all I'm saying is with the coaches, and Arroyo specifically, when you have the awareness of the criticism, and it's not that he's bad, it's just that we've seen this act before. We, you know,
Stanford.
It's not elite coaching,
no,
yet, and it's just it is in a lot of ways, as it is in recruiting.
Yeah,
some of the best recruiting they've ever done,
ever.
But in game, this was a big question mark that people had, and they didn't pass the test in the first game. So
doesn't mean it can't be there, well, but now,
what I'm saying is when you're the first step to getting better is admitting that you have a problem And it sounds like Arroyo, at least with this particular game, did that. The one thing that's interesting to me that you brought up earlier, which I want to get to next, is that there does seem to be one element where they are not admitting that it's an issue, and it's with Mario Cristobal, and we'll get to that when we come back. But first, Mike with SportsCenter.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Yeah, and who knows if the Ducks and Arroyo, as he mentioned today, he kind of lamented not, you know, trusting the young receivers they had in there more. They open up the playbook a little bit more. If they do that, then maybe there are a multitude of mistakes that were killing him for that. Then it's like, sure. Hey,
I just don't,
you know, it
I
can work. He picked his poison. It was wrong because they lost. Yeah. But at the same time, it could have worked out even worse the other way. We don't know. I understand why he didn't trust the matchups that were out there.
And that's why I said, I think you got to be careful. I always say that the hardest thing to do is to be overly critical of play calling or schemes, game plans, because you're not in there. You don't know what the personnel you're dealing with. You don't know what the confidence level is. You don't know what the other team is doing unless you're be able to get scouting reports and you're able to get the all 22. But I will tell you that sometimes it can be frustrating. I get it as an average fan. It's frustrating for me at times as someone that's trying to watch it with an analytic kind of viewpoint to it when you're not seeing adjustments that are being made. There are things you can do against man coverage when you have a team that's stacking you against the run and is slanting and is trying to take away those seams and gaps. There should be basic ways that you attack those things, right? You attack zone, you attack man in different ways that are almost universal football concepts. And this is the same thing I said when Herbert got hurt and you went down to the Braxton Burmeister stuff. The offense was just, it was maddening. It was maddening how basic it was. And I get that he really struggled throwing the football. But again, if you have a quarterback that struggles to throw the football, there's still other things you can do to try to scheme around that. And at times it has appeared over the last season plus that Oregon doesn't attempt things, that there is more of a conservative approach of we're going to win playing defense and running the ball and being physical. And I think that while that's frustrating, I think that that's something that may not change because I think that's something that comes from the head coach that may be part of that SEC like mentality that he's trying to build.
So you were that's exactly what I wanted to touch on. So Arroyo feels like he's aware enough to get better because he said it, right?
Yes.
And you know, the more experience he gets, hopefully the better he gets because this is an issue so far. But he's a young coordinator. With Cristobal, and you saw this on the play.
Fourth and one.
It was fourth and inches.
Yeah.
And Tyler Shuck was in there because Herbert was out. And I remember saying to somebody I was watching the game with, like, man, what if they just do something fun with Shuck here? Like, because the whole world thinks they're going to run the ball on that play.
To the left, and Auburn did too.
I thought, man, what if they, you know, this would be a time where, you know, this big ball's chip. Remember that whole, all that stuff that he used to get credit for? I thought, man, what a time to trust that Shuck kid. One play. And he could have had, I mean, he could have scored if they roll him out the other way, little play fake. Dude, he's
sold
gone.
Out.
They did.
100%.
And everybody knew it.
Yeah.
And yet, they ran it right into the teeth of what Auburn presented. And so that's what I'm getting at is that Cristobal, he has built a tough, I thought they played tough. I thought they looked tougher than the Oregon Ducks have ever looked. They physically look bigger. There's no doubt about that.
That O-line's going to win you a lot of games. It's really good.
They're really good. And they're just trending in the right way. It's a little more SEC type because that's where he's from, right? Mm-hmm. It's what he always talks about. However, too stubborn, right? Like sometimes it can be detrimental. You beat your head against the wall saying, nope. I guarantee you he got in the huddle and was like, men, we're going to run this.
Yeah.
Everybody knows we're going to run it and you're still going to get it anyway because that's what we do. That's who we are. that kind of thing can get you in trouble.
It can.
And that's what I think happened there, and it certainly cost them. They probably win the game if they get that first down.
Yes,
and because they milk the clock.
And that's one of those things that if you get it, then everyone praises him and is like, that's the toughness that everyone knew it was coming and we couldn't, you know, no one could stop it anyways. And then you don't get it and everyone kills you. But yes, I think that he at times holds on to that mantra a little too much. I think it almost cost him against Washington last year. Washington kicks a field goal, they lose that, and I think they got conservative. They get conservative against Stanford in the second half. And this is why I said, unless you're in those coaches' meetings, be careful throwing, you know, shade like you know exactly what's going on. I wonder sometimes how much autonomy Arroyo really has and how much he's being told, this is the way we're going to do it. We're not going to do anything dumb, especially after some of the mistakes in the first half. Look, run the ball, short passing attack. We're going to play defense, and we're going to run the ball, and we're going to close this thing out with a four-minute offense. And if that's the edict from up top, if that's coming from the head coach, how much freedom does Arroyo really have? Because I do think that that is something that is very important to Mario Cristobal, is to develop this ground and pound type football, you know. And while I understand what he's trying to do, there are times where I'm like, you have Justin Herbert, you have a very special 4-year quarterback.
Well, that play they didn't.
No, but, no, they didn't.
And that was a big issue.
Yeah,
I mean,
if they had him, I don't think anything changes.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that is 100% his mindset of we're going to be tougher than you. And on that play, obviously it backfired. But I think some of that bleeds into everything that Oregon does. I wonder at times, why doesn't Herbert seem to have more autonomy at the line of scrimmage? You have a 4-year 4.0 biology major back there that's supposed to be a number one pick, and yet it sure doesn't seem like they give him a whole lot of control at the line of scrimmage. So again, I wonder how much of this is coming from the top of this is the way that we're going to do this.
Or how much of it is.
And by the way, that almost beat the number 16 team in the country and will win you a lot of ball games. Just at times, it seems puzzling that they are so staunchly against going away from that.
How much of it is on Herbert to be more in command? And when they start seeing him more in command, yeah, which is what people have been calling for, including even sometimes his teammates, when they start seeing that, then they will give him more. So it's the chicken and the egg thing. It's hard to know.
And you don't know because, again, but you're not in meetings. You're not in huddles.
Yeah.
It's all question marks.
They lost 27-21. It's over. They move on to play Nevada. I do think that Herbert should work more on the Hail Mary. That was not a good Hail Mary.
No, it wasn't. Because it not like he had to throw it 60 yards or anything.
Toss that sucker up there.
Yeah, it wasn't.
He threw it like 15 yards out of the back of the
I think he was a little worked up.
Yeah.
A little hyped.
They gotta practice that more.
Yeah, well, that's not where you want to be. You don't want to be at the You don't want to be at the end of the game having to put one up. But yeah, you gotta give your guy a chance. But although in defense of Herbert, hadn't thrown the ball more than 4 yards downfield in 2.5 hours, so that's maybe true. It came as a shock to his system.
Well, Stanford won, so that was a nice little W, even though, I mean, Northwestern's not ranked, but you know, that's a tough team.
And by the way, real quick, someone saying, what if Auburn isn't that good? I don't think they are.
Not with Knicks.
No, I think Auburn, if
they're going to have to grind it out.
If that's Auburn, that's a 3-4 loss football team. If you know, he can get better and he can improve, but no, Auburn is not a national title contending team.
So are we going to get that narrative later down the road when Auburn drops a couple that, oh man, how bad this loss?
It's possible.
For Oregon looks.
Well, a lot of it depends on what Oregon does. All the stuff we just got done talking about, I think Oregon's going to, to me, there's no excuse for them to not win 10 games.
I agree.
The as talented as they are, especially up front, they're going to maul a lot of people in the Pac-12. And I loved what I saw from the defense in Avalos. I think they got worn down and got left on the field too much in the second half, and Auburn made a couple plays. But I really like the defense. So if that's the Oregon, just that game in a nutshell, if that's Oregon, to me, there's no excuse not winning 10 games with the schedule you have.
Well,
you know, Washington is going to be a tough one at Seattle, because I think they're as physical and as talented as you. But Nevada, Montana, Stanford, Cal, Colorado.
Don't forget about my Cougs.
Your Cougs will be interesting because, they've beaten them 4 years in a row, and Washington State has given them fits. But that's why I said, for the most part, they should be double-digit favorites in most of the games that they're playing. So Oregon's going to win a lot of games. If they don't, then there's a real issue, because that's a really talented team.
So the narrative could be they win 10, but it's a what-if situation if you're just able to hold on and not blow it and Coug it against Auburn.
Well, and you got to be perfect the rest of the way out because, you know, if you want to get where you ultimately was the goal, you can't lose again. And I think that's going to be hard to do. You know, we haven't had a Pac-12 team that's done that yet.
Yeah, I don't know. I think everybody was a little over their skis with regard to that kind of talk.
Yeah.
I get why, you know, a lot of fans are feeling good about it, but I don't know if they're that.
No.
I mean, come on. That's a little out. That's a couple years down the road, if that. I mean, they still got to keep recruiting, bringing in these classes that they're.
But you're not there at wide receiver. You're not there at running back. And we'll see about a defense when they get a stiffer challenge. Because, again, I think Auburn was really limited with the freshman quarterback who, quite frankly, was not very good at all. He was 13 to 31 for .177 and two horrible picks.
The Pac-12 is not going to the playoff.
No.
Unless Washington. I think Washington has the best chance to be to get in there again.
Well, and their schedule allows it because they don't play anybody.
That's what I'm saying. And they're good. And then, of course, the Husky fans are feeling pretty good about a quarterback that, you know, Easton looked pretty good.
He looked great. It was Eastern Washington, but he looked fantastic.
Yeah. So they feel good about their offense maybe being a little bit better. So
and they're deep. They played like 64 kids.
Yeah. That's awesome.
They're deep.
You know, Oregon beat Washington last year, but why we have anointed Oregon over Washington is a little silly. Yeah. I mean, I get why people are excited, but and then that game's in Seattle. But outside of that, Oregon should win a lot of games. I'm with you. I think after a couple of days is just sitting on it, that was a tough, tough loss, tough way to lose, self-inflicted. But I thought Oregon looked pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And that offensive line, you're right, man. They are a load.
And I will tell you that in all my years of watching Pac-12 football, it's early. He has the potential to be one of the best offensive linemen I have ever seen, and that's Penei Sewell. He is, if you ever get a chance and you're watching a game at home, just keep an eye on him. The athleticism he has, and look, there's some technique stuff that he still needs to work out. You can tell he's raw, but you should not be that big and that athletic. His ability to get to the second level and just his footwork and size and strength, he is an absolute freak of nature, how good he is.
Who was the most impressive team this weekend? We'll get to that coming up next, 5:46 on the Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
Most impressive team this weekend? My Georgia State Panthers.
That was fantastic.
That was. They went into Tennessee and beat Tennessee 38-30.
They were like, depending on where you looked, it was between 25 and 28 point dogs. And they beat them, and not like in a fluke either. They flat out beat them.
Georgia State.
The most impressive teams were the teams that we all thought were elite. They all were elite. You know, Clemson, you know, I guess they played early, but, you know, they beat the hell out of Georgia Tech. Ohio State, Justin Fields looked like he was the real deal. They put that thing away early. Alabama was dominant. Oklahoma looked really, really good.
Dude, Lincoln Riley.
Pay attention. Like, there's lots of good guys on Twitter that are doing, like, detailed breakdowns of offenses. And some of the stuff that Lincoln Riley is doing is next level.
How does he not have his pick of jobs?
He does. If he wanted to be in the NFL, he'd be in the NFL right now. I mean, plain and simple.
Because
if you're a quarterback,
yeah, go there.
Why don't you want to go there?
Hurts.
There was this. I'm trying to remember who did it. I'm sorry. I'm not giving you proper credit, but I saw two plays where they broke it down. Where they did this play action pass, how on earth someone would think that this was a play action? They pulled two offensive linemen, and Hurts ran down the line of scrimmage like 7 yards. Like, everything looked like a quarterback designed run, and this went on for a good solid 3.5 seconds before he took a step back and found a guy just standing wide open in the middle of the field. And they were doing this other one where they were saying that a lot of people have the RPOs, the run pass options, but Oklahoma does PROs, pass run options, where they pass protect, and then because of the routes that they run, they basically tell Jalen Hurts that you basically have one route to look at. They run these clear out routes, and then he'll focus on one guy, and if the linebacker or the safety runs with him, that means there's no one there, and Jalen then just takes off and runs. And they were just gashing Houston with it. And I have no idea how, like, as I was sitting there watching this play over and over again, I was like, if I'm Houston, I don't know how to defend that. their defenders are doing exactly what you're taught to do against these sorts of routes, and you're damned if you do, because either you spy on Hurts and you let the drag route run right over the middle for an easy completion and a first down, or you run with the receiver and Jalen Hurts takes off and runs unmolested for 30 yards.
I also saw a fake triple option quarterback counter.
Yeah.
That they all ran the triple option to the right side, and it might not have been Hurts, but somebody then faked the counter to the other side.
Yeah.
And it was wide open. I've never seen that before in my life.
I think that I could get some Heisman votes because if I played there, because every time their quarterback throws the ball,
there isn't
anybody within 20 yards of it.
No, and this is kind of what I was saying with Oregon.
I can hit that guy.
And I get that you're struggling on the outside with receivers, but you can scheme guys open. It's harder to do in the NFL, but you can scheme guys open in college football. You really can. And at least against Auburn, you didn't.
My Panthers were great. And by the way, Georgia State goes to Tennessee and wins. This is only their seventh year
as a Division I program.
They started 0-12 and went 1-11. But last year they only won two games. But there were a couple years where they won six or seven games. But they've only been playing for six. This is their seventh season.
And they were 28-point dogs.
Yeah, and they went to Tennessee. That's awesome. And then how about Portland State?
Yeah, giving Arkansas what for?
20-13 they lost, but at Arkansas?
Yeah.
That's nice.
Well, Arkansas has been garbage, and it sounds like that's a full-on rebuild there.
But. So the SEC, so impressive.
No, Mizzou lost to Wyoming in Wyoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then
Kelly Bryant.
Somebody else lost.
Ole Miss lost to Memphis.
But Ole Miss was actually an underdog in that game, believe it or not.
Yeah. Oh, North Carolina lost. North Carolina beat South Carolina.
Yeah. And I saw this... from South Carolina after that the defeat, they're benching their quarterback and they're going with the younger brother of Tyler Helinski, the freshman.
Oh.
So it's...
I didn't know he had a younger brother.
Yeah, I think it's Ryan. Anyway, the younger brother is going to be the starting quarterback next week for South Carolina.
One other college football note, Brad Powers of pregame.com is, I think, a good Twitter follow if you like the gambling perspective. And he wrote that teams with 15 or more returning starters... went 10-20 against the spread.
Really?
Yeah. So he was kind of making the point, experience in college football may be overrated. Teams with 15 or more returning starters went 10-20 against the spread. Teams with 10 or fewer returning starters actually went 12-9-1 against the spread. So if you bet on experience, you lost.
Yeah, maybe one of those things that, yeah, we returned everyone, but everyone sucked last year. So maybe that's not a good thing.
There's that.
But Tennessee was funny. That was my one. And Boise State coming back because they were getting hammered.
Florida State.
I really thought, I did not watch the second half. I thought it was over. Florida State looked dominant. They were running all over Boise State. And I was like, well, he's a scumbag, but you hired the Bryles kid and he's got their offense pointed in the right direction, and the Florida State defense looked good. So I was just like, all right, well, they're hammering Boise, and maybe Florida State's going to be good. And then I look up, like, on Twitter, and some people were like, oh, Willie's gone. I was like, what?
Shocking that he didn't adjust in the second half, and Boise State did.
They blew that lead, which is just great. And did you see today that he had the balls to claim that the humidity and cramping played a role in it?
Oh, did he say that?
He said dehydration was likely the issue in the second half.
Hey, Willie, your team's from Florida. But by the way, I've played against Florida State in Florida, and yes, I did cramp. It sucks down there in August and September. But here's the thing. You're from Florida. How are you guys affected by it worse than the people from Boise?
Well... yeah. All right. Well, Florida State, they broke a couple big ones early in that game.
Yeah.
But Boise State was moving the ball. They just were having trouble converting. And in the second half,
I don't think Florida State scored in the second half.
It was night and day. No, they were up 31-13, lost 36-31.
I don't know why that makes me so happy, but it does.
And of course, Lane Kiffin sucks.
Yeah.
Although
playing Ohio State. What do you want from him?
Well, they actually looked pretty good in the second half.
Go out.
Yeah.
Because that game was, it was like 21-0 within about 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It was ugly. And then
it was 28-3 at the half.
They ended up hanging around.
Well, it was 45-21.
What an exciting time.
Ohio State stopped playing, but yeah.
All right. We got to get to the club. Let's do it. Club 1080 next on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.